From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is a special fundraising episode of Reveal. I'm Al Letson, and if you're like me, the last couple years, you've felt this rising sense of dread watching the news. Mass shootings like the one at Walmart in El Paso, Texas, are a reminder of how racist and white supremacist ideology can turn deadly. Police say the shooter posted a white nationalist anti-immigrant manifesto online just before he shot and killed 22 people. Reveal has been covering the hate movement. And earlier this year, after another mass shooting in New Zealand, we reached out to Megan Squire. On the day of that shooting, she was in her car heading home in North Carolina when she heard the news.
And I heard two different newscasters flipping back and forth between the news stations. And one of them said they saw an 83-page manifesto or something like that. And the other one said a 70-something page manifesto. And I went, oh, what's going on here? There's multiple versions.
Megan is a computer scientist and professor at Elon University. A few years ago, she was researching, well, boring things like software developers. No offense. That work ended. Donald Trump was elected. And she started focusing her research on how extremism is spreading online.
I'm a computer scientist. What can I provide? What can I offer? What patterns can I find? How can I understand what's happening in our country and what's happening on the internet from a, you know, very systematic, data-driven kind of way?
Megan was driving and listening. Her thoughts were locked on the massacre and how the shooter was using the internet by live-streaming the attacks and publishing his manifesto.
I'd already been collecting sort of these hate manifestos from different killers, trying to do some text mining on it and see what themes they were taking from one another, see if they were radicalizing one another. So when I heard there was a manifesto here and that there were multiple versions of it, that was extremely interesting to me. So I raced home, started, wrote some software to begin collecting as many different versions of the manifesto as I could find so that I could compare what was changing in between them.
And what'd you find?
So I collected a couple hundred different versions of the manifesto, found that they weren't changing it terribly much. Sometimes there was cover art added and things like that, but they weren't. They were treating the manifesto as an artifact, or like almost like a holy artifact. They weren't changing it substantially at all. But the video that the killer made of his attack, they were changing that a lot. They almost immediately started memeing the video. So they would add soundtracks, they would turn it into a video game, they would take clips out and add different clips, they would add subtitles, you know, add artwork into the video, I mean, just all kinds of changes.
Megan says the more variations, the harder it is to remove something from the internet. So while there was some success in getting rid of the manifesto, the video was another story.
For somebody like the New Zealand government, I mean, they want the videos removed. They feel like it glorifies this tragic event. For people who study extremism, like myself, we notice radicalization that happens after one incident. You know, other incidents could happen.
Another deadly shooting at a house of worship. It happened in a synagogue in Poway, California.
6 weeks after the New Zealand attack, a 19-year-old man opened fire at a synagogue in Southern California, killing one person and injuring three others. Before that attack, the gunman posted his own manifesto on Facebook.
And in that manifesto, he cited the New Zealand shooter. So one can lead to another. It's kind of like a domino effect.
So it's really hard to stop the spread of this type of extremism on the internet. What are the social media companies, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, what are they saying about it? Like, how are they trying to stop it?
Yeah, so they have a two-prong approach right now. One, they're putting bodies on it, so just more moderators, more eyes, you know, human eyes on the problem.
Facebook is purging several high-profile names from its platform.
Yesterday, Twitter announced that it is permanently suspending the accounts of the conservative commentator Alex Jones.
Alex Jones and his media outlet InfoWars.
Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan.
Paul Joseph Watson, who's a notorious anti-Muslim conspiracy theorist.
They're being banned for spreading, quote, dangerous ideology.
Social media companies call this deplatforming. Megan says executives are also talking up another approach to removing hate speech from the internet.
Which is like, well, pretty soon we'll be able to solve this with artificial intelligence, right? Like, we'll be able to throw machine learning or some kind of AI at this problem, and that'll take care of it. Mark Zuckerberg, for example, is on record in front of Congress saying that AI is going to solve it.
Over the long term, building AI tools is going to be the scalable way to identify and root out most of this harmful content. We're investing a lot in doing that, as well as scaling up the number of people who are doing content review.
It's a pretty hard line to toe, though. Like, it's just really hard. I don't know how many eyeballs we would have needed to stop something like the live streaming of the New Zealand shooter. I think there's maybe some other things I could do, you know, as a stopgap until their magical AI solution comes to fruition. But even that, I'm kind of a pessimist about. So,
The AI solution, I don't know. Like, how are you going to teach a computer to understand how hate and extremism works in America? Like, it's a very human, it's an emotional thing, isn't it? I just have a hard time, like, believing that AI is going to be able to figure that out.
It's extremely challenging. It's also kind of creepy. I mean, we've all seen Minority Report, right? Movies like that, where you try to predict people's behavior. So I think this is a really kind of dark road they're going down.
Megan says there's something else going on, something that makes it even harder for government regulators and mainstream technology companies. It's called alt tech.
I like to think of alt tech as, okay, so imagine you have a playground at school, and there's a bully on your playground, and the teacher keeps putting the bully in timeout. So the bully gets his dad to build a brand new playground with the same slides and the same, you know, teeter-totters and all that stuff. That's alt tech. They're getting put in timeout on the traditional playground of social media, right? And so now they're moving into their own special playground that they're getting people to build just for them. And they can do whatever they want in there. So alt tech is a suite. It's like really a replacement infrastructure for the internet as we know it. So it's everything from special browsers and plugins to browsers to payment processors and domain registration and web hosting and just all of VPN services, just all those things that make up the internet the way we use it. And they're just building a copycat version of that for themselves where they can say and do what they like.
One player in the alt-tech movement who caught Megan's attention is a guy named Rob Monster.
Rob Monster is the CEO of Epic.com. He's the dad. He's the bully dad in my playground scenario. He is the domain registrar right now for Gab, which is a sort of alt-tech social network. It's like a Twitter clone, kind of. He's also domain registrar for BitChute, which is like a YouTube alternative that shows videos that YouTube won't show, which is, you know, YouTube will show a lot of videos, so that tells you a little bit about BitChute. He also just does web hosting for tons of alt-right podcasts, things like that.
Today, I have a very exciting guest.
Rob wouldn't talk to us, but we have an interview of him on something called The People Square.
Oh, yeah. That's a alt-right podcast. It's run by a guy named Eric Stryker. He goes by that. That's not his real name.
How are you, Rob?
Hey, good. Good to be with you.
On the show, Monster attacks the radical left, the government, and big tech companies. But he says this about David Duke, the white nationalist and former KKK leader.
When he has some, you know, far-right views and so forth, but he's actually a pretty clever guy. He's, you know, articulate. He knows history. And I don't know the body of his work, but I have a feeling that many people grew up with this mindset that says, you know, you should never listen to anything that David Duke says. Or
he's really one of the central players in attempting to build this alt-tech infrastructure stack. It would be a replacement for the regular internet tools that we all use. He's really into the fact that he has a right to do it. So if we have a right to do something, he feels like he has to express that by physically helping to build the tools to engage that right. So the First Amendment, right? He had free speech.
Our mandate is essentially to allow the public internet to function as intended. And that sometimes means developing appropriate technology countermeasures.
So he has taken it on himself to build these tools to help companies and organizations and websites and podcasts and stuff that are so extreme they've been kicked off of regular media, regular platforms, and he wants to provide them with an alternative.
It sounds like he's hearkening back to the early days of the internet.
You know, they're always remembering back to an earlier time, which may or may not have actually existed. But this is another case where he's, you know, hearkening back to the days when the internet was free. The internet may have felt more free to some people then, but it wasn't less filled with hate. It just was a little bit harder for that hate to spread. Neo-Nazi groups and the Klan and all these kind of white nationalist groups, they've been on the internet since pretty much day one. They were very excited about this technology. They've been there. It just wasn't quite as easy for them to spread their message, and you had to look for it a little bit harder. So, yeah, they are building something that looks a lot like that.
Megan says she's especially troubled by one piece of Rob Monster's technology arsenal. It's known as the Interplanetary File System, or IPFS. It splits files into many pieces that are spread out among thousands of participants on a network.
On its own, it's just another technology like any other. But the way he weaponized this was to deliberately store the manifesto from the Christchurch shooter and the video out on there as a, almost as a thumbing his nose, right, at the idea that this material could be taken down by regular social media platforms. So he was, in a way, he was kind of fronting, like, oh, I'm building this alt tech stack, and part of that's going to be this decentralized technology, and you'll never be able to take down files that we put out there.
So where's all this going?
Yeah, that's one of the things that worries me the most. It's one of the things that keeps me up thinking about how this is going to play out in the future. So deplatforming barely works as it is with the social media companies the way they are. And this alt tech stack will probably continue to grow, and it'll get bigger. There will be a move towards the decentralized web, which is kind of this peer-to-peer internet replacement. And once that's in place, if that's in place, it will be very hard to appeal to any centralized authority to do things like remove manifesto files or take a person off, you know, a disruptive person off of a social media site.
Do you think that the problems that we're seeing now that are kind of rising to the surface, that some of that can be attributed to the fact that the United States government and governments around the world have been really slow to understand exactly what the problem is? And so if they don't understand how Facebook works, how can they regulate Facebook? If they don't understand how this alt-platforming alternative dimension works, how can they actually look out for the little guy if they don't understand how it works?
It bothers me to no end that they still don't understand how the internet works. There are governments, though, around the world that do understand how this stuff works and are already taking steps to just use their version of alt tech or the separate internet for censorship purposes, to remove their country from the main internet. So there was a story about Russia doing exactly that. You know, there's a well-documented history of Chinese censorship of dozens of pieces of the internet.
It's interesting that two big countries that are actually weaponizing the internet are the two countries that are ahead of the curve when it comes to thinking about how to handle this type of stuff. Also, I would say that those two countries really don't care about free speech at all. So do we, as the United States, have to become like that?
That's a completely legitimate worry. And I study hate speech every day. I study these just absolutely vile, dark, incredibly toxic places online. And yeah, it's not a happy place to be thinking about any kind of censorship. I mean, it's just bad. And yet here we are. People are dying. So I'm absolutely nauseated with the idea that Russia and China censor, and should the United States be in that position? It's just, it's awful.
What is it like for you to have to go into these dark corners of the internet every day?
I try to send my software there first. So, mostly I study. I try to write programs that can take some of the load, organize stuff, put it where it needs to be so I can study it, try to be very systematic about it, try to keep an eye on the prize, you know. It can be very tiring, though, especially when I start thinking about the stuff in the future. When I read that comment Rob Monster posted on Gab about, he was bragging about how he had stored copies of that manifesto onto a decentralized web platform so that it could never be censored or removed. And he was really proud of that. And I just felt so tired. So I could see how this was all going to play out in the future. It's going to be vigilante hacker groups, you know, battling it out, and who can invent the next technology that'll be able to store things even more safely, more securely. Oh, my gosh. Okay, here we go. So,
Megan, you have scared the hell out of me.
I'm sorry. The alt-right guys call that a black pill, by the way. They call it when you give someone so much depressing information that they're saddened about it. So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to black pill you.
No, we should just, well, don't worry. I mean, we should name this podcast Black Pill because we do it every week.
Yeah, there you go.
So Megan Squire, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me.
It was my pleasure.
We will continue to report on the hate movement and other big stories we're following, and we hope you'll continue to listen. At the end of every Reveal episode, I say there is always more to the story. Part of that is you, the role you play in keeping independent journalism going. Here's how to do that.